Dr. Ralph Wilson with the Jesus Walk Bible Study Series. We're studying John's Gospel, A Discipleship Journey with Jesus, and this is Appendix 6, Glory and Glorify in John's Gospel. One of the major themes in John's Gospel is glory and glorification. The Synoptic Gospels, especially Luke, feature the angel's glorious announcement of Jesus' birth, the glory of the Transfiguration, and the Son of Man coming in glory. But John's Gospel develops themes of glory and glorification in much greater depth. Throughout the Old Testament, we read about the glory of God, which was sometimes manifested in fire and brightness, what the Jews called the Shekinah, the dwelling or settling of the divine presence. In Hebrew, glory is kabod, from kabed, to be heavy, hence wealth, honor, dignity, power, etc. In the New Testament, kabod is translated by doxa, reputation. God's glory is seen through his actions. Psalm 19:1, the heavens declare the glory of God, the skies proclaim the work of his hands. The concept of glory is first developed in Exodus. God reveals his glory and enhances his reputation in his defeat of Pharaoh in Egypt and other marvelous deeds. When the Israelites grumble about not having food, God not only provides food, but they look towards the desert, and there was the glory of the Lord appearing in the cloud, Exodus 16:10. The glory appeared as both cloud and fire. Exodus 24:16-17. The glory of the Lord settled on Mount Sinai. For 6 days the cloud covered the mountain. To the Israelites, the glory of the Lord looked like consuming fire on top of the mountain. One day Moses asked Yahweh, "Now show me your glory." This is Exodus 33:18-21-23. Then the Lord said, "There is a place near me where you can stand on a rock. When my glory passes, I will put you in a cleft in the rock and cover you with my hand until I have passed by. Then I will remove my hand, and you will see my back, but my face must not be seen." Moses himself was changed by communing with God. This is Exodus 34:29-30. When Moses came down from Mount Sinai, he was not aware that his face was radiant because he had spoken with the Lord. When Aaron and all the Israelites saw Moses, his face was radiant and they were afraid to come near him. Paul uses this as an analogy of communing with God and being changed by it, 2 Corinthians 3:18. "And we all with unveiled face, beholding the glory of the Lord, are being transformed into the same image from one degree of glory to another. For this comes from the Lord who is the Spirit." To the people of Israel, Yahweh's glory sometimes manifested himself over the tabernacle in the wilderness by a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night, Exodus 3:21. Yahweh is the epitome of light itself, Psalm 104:1-2. "You are clothed with splendor and majesty. He wraps himself in light as with a garment," Habakkuk 3:4. "His splendor was like the sunrise. Rays flashed from his hand where his power was hidden." 1 Timothy 6:16. "He dwells in unapproachable light." The Jews call this dwelling presence of God the Shekinah glory, from Hebrew root shakan, settle, inhabit, dwell, and is seen in the noun mishkan, dwelling place, tabernacle. We see this idea of Shekinah reflected in the Gospel of John 1:14. "The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth." John had seen that very Shekinah glory upon Jesus during the Transfiguration, and, with Peter and James, were eyewitnesses of his majesty. I'm reading Matthew 17:1-2. "After 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John, the brother of James, and led them up a high mountain by themselves. There he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became as white as the light." The New Testament uses the same root as Hebrew, kabod. The words are based on the root doxa, from which we get our word doxology, a liturgical expression of praise to God. Doxa, the noun, is the condition of being bright or shining, brightness, splendor, radiance, and the idea honor as an enhancement or recognition of status or performance, fame, recognition, renown, honor, prestige. Doxazo, the verb, means to influence one's opinion about another so as to enhance the latter's reputation, praise, honor, extol, and to cause to have splendid greatness, clothe in splendor, glorify of the glory that comes in the next life. Now that we've explored the concept of glory in the Old Testament and considered the Greek words in the New Testament, we're ready to consider glory in John's Gospel. The prologue to John's Gospel speaks of Jesus as light, evoking the Shekinah glory of God who dwells in unapproachable light. I'm reading chapter 1, verses 4 through 5. In him was life, and that life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, but the darkness is not understood or overcome it. Later in the first chapter, we learn that the Father's only Son displays the Father's glory here on earth. John 1:14. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. Jesus' glory is intended to spill out and be revealed by means of the miraculous signs he performs. They are signposts that point to who he is, the Son of God. Let me give you a couple of examples. Chapter 2, verse 11, of the changing of water into wine at Cana. This, the first of his miraculous signs, Jesus performed at Cana in Galilee. He thus revealed his glory, and his disciples put their faith in him. And then chapter 11, verse 4, upon hearing of Lazarus' illness. When he heard this, Jesus said, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, that God's Son may be glorified through it." 11:4. And then at the tomb of Lazarus, 11:40, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" Jesus plainly acknowledges that his glory comes directly from his Father, a fact he does not hide from those who listen to his teachings. 8:49-50, to his opponents, the Jewish leaders, "I honor my Father, and you dishonor me. I am not seeking glory for myself, but there is one who seeks it, and he is the judge." 8:54, "If I glorify myself, my glory means nothing. My Father, whom you claim as your God, is the one who glorifies me." And then 12:28-29, nearing Holy Week, as Jesus talks about his resurrection, "Father, glorify your name." Then a voice came from heaven, "I have glorified it, and I will glorify it again." The crowd that was there and heard it said that it had thundered, but others said that an angel had spoken to him. Of the Holy Spirit, the Paraclete, 16:14, "He will bring glory to me by taking from what is mine and making it known to you." The high priestly prayer in John 17, after Jesus said this, he looked toward heaven and prayed, "Father, the time has come, glorify your Son, that your Son may glorify you." And then 17:4-5, "I have brought you glory on earth by completing the work you gave me to do. And now, Father, glorify me in your presence with the glory I had with you before the world began." Glory is particularly associated with the Son of Man because of the passage in Daniel 7:13-14, "One like a Son of Man was given authority, glory, and sovereign power." We see this theme especially in the Synoptic Gospels. Matthew 16:27, "For the Son of Man is going to come in his Father's glory with his angels." Matthew 24:30, "They will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory." Matthew 25:31, "When the Son of Man comes in his glory, then all the angels with him, he will sit on his throne in heavenly glory." This is probably what James and John were referring to when they asked in Mark 10:37, "Let one of us sit on your right and the other on your left in your glory." But we also see the theme of glory of the Son of Man in John's Gospel. 13:31-32. When Judas was gone, Jesus said, "Now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will glorify the Son in himself and will glorify him at once." So it begins. The cross especially, along with his subsequent resurrection and ascension, are seen as the means of his glorification. Probably Jesus knew this from a verse from the great suffering servant passage from Isaiah that combines his suffering with his glory. In the Greek Septuagint translation, it uses the same Greek words that John is using to express the concept, Isaiah 52:13. "See, my servant will act wisely. He will be raised and lifted up and highly exalted." Jesus echoed these words in his three statements about being lifted up. "Just as Moses lifted up the snake in the wilderness, so the Son of Man must be lifted up, that everyone who believes in him may have eternal life." 3:14-15. 8:28. "When you have lifted up the Son of Man, then you will know that I am the one I claim to be, and that I do nothing on my own, but speak just what the Father has taught me." And then 12:32-33, "But I, when I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all men to myself." He said this to show the kind of death he was going to die. John speaks of Jesus' glorification in a way that includes the crucifixion, resurrection, and ascension as a single event. 7:39, "Up to that time the Spirit had not yet been given, since Jesus had not yet been glorified." 12:16, "Only after Jesus was glorified did they realize that these things had been written about him and that they had done these things to him." And then 12:41, "Isaiah said this because he saw Jesus' glory and spoke about him." To the men on the road to Emmaus, Jesus explained the scriptures and then said, "Did not the Son have to suffer these things and then enter in his glory?" Luke 24:26. Glory is brought to Jesus through his followers. 17:10, "To the Father, all I have is yours, and all you have is mine. And glory has come to me through them." 17:22, "I have given them the glory you gave me, that they may be one as we are one." And then 17:24, "Father, I want those you have given me to be with me where I am and to see my glory, the glory you have given me because you loved me before the creation of the world." Finally, Jesus instructs his disciples that by his life he is bringing glory to the Father, and they are to do likewise. 15:8, "This is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples." 13:31-32, "When Judas was gone, Jesus said, Now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will glorify the Son in himself and will glorify him at once." 14:13, "And I will do whatever you ask in my name, so that the Son may bring glory to the Father." 17:4-5, "I have brought you glory on earth by completing the work you gave me to do. And now, Father, glorify me in your presence with the glory I had with you before the world began." The high priestly prayer in John 17:1. After Jesus said this, he looked toward heaven and prayed, "Father, the time has come. Glorify your Son, that your Son may glorify you." 15:8, "This is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourself to be my disciples." And 21:19, Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God.